Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
And the Escape Pod has a very exciting guest who happens to be our co-host. Joe.
I've come back in from the cold.
You have? Well, you've launched yourself back into the cold from beautiful European summer. What were your first impressions getting off the plane? What were your second impressions?
It's damn cold.
Mm-hmm.
And very chilly. It was very chilly, and I was very, very fortunate that I have a beautiful wardrobe of vintage minks to just step into because, my goodness, I've needed it these last few days.
I've noticed you're furry.
Very, very furry. And a favourite gift while I was away was a pair of fur-lined gloves from a third-generation glove maker in Madrid.
Oh, wow.
So they have come in handy in these last couple of days.
Well, we've got a lot of questions to ask you about your trip to Europe and how it's changed. Europe hasn't changed a lot in a lot of ways, but it has changed economically, and that's changed the way people do and experience their life. And you were in countries that were heavily affected by the economic changes in the last few years. So it'd be very interesting to hear your take on that. What was your first impression?
I think my first impression was doors closing, mind the gap, the London Tube.
Right. Because London has Mind the Gap. Berlin has, Damen und Herren, bitte beachten Sie die Lücke zwischen Zug und Bahnsteigkante.
Yeah, you see, I just can't quite say that as quickly.
It means Mind the Gap.
It does. It's just a very long about way of saying Mind the Gap.
It's very German.
It's very so precise and yet not so precise.
Yeah, well, the joke is in Berlin, they, you know, it's a German railway. They don't have a gap. I don't even know why they bother. Yeah, that's the world. So you were in a bunch of different places. So today we're going to interview you about your travel experiences because you literally have the freshest of anyone that we know in Joyland.
Yeah, I think I could definitely say that my memories are still very fresh and top of mind. Happy to share.
And we have a special guest listener today, Jodie Wilmer, who is a life member of Joy, who was host of Detours for over 16 years. She has recently returned from the United States. Would love to have got her in today, but she's not feeling well. So much love from Joy on Bourke Street to Jodie Wilmer. Hope she's feeling much better. Now, I think we're going to go into some music first up, and then we're going to listen to some stories. I think that we're going to go and follow your route around Europe.
I think that's probably a good way to do it. That will be coherent, and we'll be starting off at with my experiences of London and the London
what was
International
your first,
Wine
apart
Show.
Apart from the Mind the Gap, what was your first impression in London?
My first impression of London is that it is a city that makes men look great. You know, there are some cities like Paris and New York that really allow the feminine to come to the fore and to shine. However, London is definitely a city that allows gentlemen to really look terrific.
So we're talking about cocks and frocks?
No, we're talking about Savarot, bespoke suits, the pinstripe, the paisley, the polka dot, how it all comes together, how we're not afraid to wear different shades in contrast to one another, and terrific footwear. London is just a city that makes men look good. I think it's the shape of the buildings. I think it's the aspect, the way that the Thames.
Oh, London's got great light. I really enjoy that about London and the backdrops of the beautiful buildings.
Yeah, and that Tupperware sky. We'll talk about that a little later.
The saucepan lid on top of the city. Yeah, yeah. Even in summer, did you not get good weather?
A lot of grey.
A
lot of multiple colours of grey. It kind of reminded me a little bit about the way the Russians deal with London. Actually, they march right in and they put their money on the table and they're happy to rule the world.
Oh, give us an anecdote. Thrill us with an anecdote about a Russian flopping it on the table and ruling the world.
Oh, I might be telling tales out of school.
You're telling tales out of London. No one's listening. Or they could be on www.joy.org.au/listen-live.
Well, they could indeed, because I did get an Englishman to join up during the latest membership drive.
Excellent. So I might have well-dressed to be a well-dressed
Londoner. Well, actually, a cameraman for Wimbledon.
Ah, okay.
Yes, so Angus has just finished doing Eastbourne, and now he'll be at Wimbledon.
Got his eyes on the balls.
Most definitely. He said to me, it's great eye candy.
I betcha.
He's a very happy boy when he watches Rafael Nadal slide from side to side on the grass.
Exactly. Flicking his sweat. So how do these Russians behave? It's a big cultural difference in London at the moment with European or British wealth being kind of suppressed because of the economy. But then you've got all these big spending Russians and Arabs that come in summer or all year round, but especially in summer. And it's they spend in a rather profligate way. They don't spend as discreetly as British wealth.
Oh, most definitely. And I'm not sure if it's just that it upsets that British sensibility of how one would behave when one was in Harrods. But the Russians certainly have their own way of behaving.
Oh,
and it
tell
is
us.
Kind of like just...
Gossip about a whole country.
Let me just buy one of everything and charge it. You know, they're enjoying their newfound wealth immensely.
After a long time of being deprived.
And it would be fair to say that from a hospitality perspective, they are keeping some of the private clubs and the higher-end restaurants in business because they splash the cash.
And what are they eating? Borscht?
No. Goodness, no. No, they're wanting to have New Zealand and Australian lamb and even Australian red wines. I heard as I went past one table, there was, you know, much pleasure to find out that there was Grange on the list.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so they definitely know their stuff. Good drop, indeed.
It's a good drop. So London was your first port of call. And talking about wine, you were there semi-business.
I was, yes. I was there to attend the London International Wine and Spirits Show, which was located down at the Excel at Customs, which is a very large convention centre. But you know, still within the City of London, not too difficult to get to, just down past Canary Wharf. It was a sign of the times.
Is it near the O2?
Not too far from the O2. But I think trade shows of that ilk are probably seeing their last days from a business perspective.
Why is that?
It's so expensive to participate. You have to hire space. You then have to hire all of the furniture and pay for things like water connectivity. You have to send product. You have to send staff.
And accommodation, travel.
All of those add-on costs. And the reality is that people are not writing orders that would cover those costs during the time frame of those trade shows. And next year, in fact, the same wine show will be downsized and it will be located in Kensington in a far smaller venue. And really the word around this year was that most people are just going to go to Vin Expo, which is in Germany in September.
Right. So it's one of those big German expo.
Yeah, Vin Expo is
yeah,
the big
the
one.
Germans are pretty good at delivering a big international expo.
Yeah, and not only that, Germany is a big market.
Yeah, absolutely. It's still the heartbeat of Europe economically, and it's a very powerful European country, arguably the biggest and most influential of the European countries. So, yeah, they've still got money. They're still buying and selling things and living well in Germany comparatively.
They are. I think we might talk about a little bit that in detail after the break.
Brace yourselves. We're coming back. You flew out about 6 weeks ago, right?
I did indeed. It's so long ago that I'm getting tongue-tied on air.
Oh, no. So was your tongue of no use while you were in Europe?
Oh, it got a really good workout in London,
well,
I have to say.
Thrashing.
The restaurants, definitely a highlight was Dinner at Dinner by Heston Blumenthal.
Oh, crikey.
Yes.
That is quite an achievement just to get in.
Yes, there's nothing like knowing a few people in the trade to get a table.
Now tell us about Heston's Dinner.
Well, Heston's Dinner at the Mandarin Oriental is located in Knightsbridge, so it's smack bang across the road from Harvey Nicks.
Actually, it's around the corner from a friend of mine in Belgravia.
Yeah, exactly.
Just off,
yeah, near Hyde Park.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a sweet spot, lots of marble in the Mandarin Oriental. A girl has to feel at home there as her heels click, 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 click.
And you bought new heels.
I did get some new heels. Dinner at Blumenthal's is a place where they actually take dishes from the Middle Ages and the Renaissance and bring them through into 2013.
Okay, so like cups of mead?
Well, no. For example, something like a frumenti, which is a circa 1390 dish.
You must have felt like a Guelph.
No, I felt like a princess. I like those in-house jokes, but not everybody knows about them.
I think people remember our consternation of what a Guelph and a Guelph.
A Guelph and a Ghibelline.
Ghibelline, that's right. Anyway. See? Still haven't got a handle on history.
Back to the frumenti from 1390.
It was an Italian thing? This is like pre-Renaissance.
This is Middle Ages English food.
English
food. So this was grilled octopus with broth and seaweed.
Okay.
Which was really absolutely delicious.
I don't associate octopus with British food. I see that more as a sort of Eastern Mediterranean kind of Italian, Greek, Lebanese, Cyprus.
Yeah, I guess it's just that they're an island and there's octopus in them, their seas.
I thought that octopus was kind of warmer water. And that's really interesting.
It was delicious.
Yeah.
And then there was veal sweetbreads, which were just stunning. Which
sounds like something from British heritage.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then the dessert was the tipsy cake, which was from 1810.
Yeah.
And it was a divine. It was like a cross between a souffle and a cake. And the garnish was pineapple that had actually been spit roasted in the kitchen. And that was truly
tipsy
divine.
Tipsy cake from 1810. That's when Margaret Thatcher first got in, wasn't it?
Plus 100 something years. Yeah, nearly. Another dinner that was very memorable was at the River Cafe, which I'm sure people know.
Well, yes, they're about to do an Australian version of that.
They are.
I saw the sign on Punt Road.
That's right. So it was down in Hammersmith, which is a beautiful...
Hammersmith.
A beautiful walk along the river,
mm-hmm.
A little bit of al fresco dining and aperitivo outside before going into the main dining room.
It's a beautiful building, isn't it?
It's lovely because it's actually in a residential zone. Mm. So when they say they close at 11 o'clock, they close at 11 o'clock. The kitchen's done. Everybody's out of there by 11:05.
Mm. Respectful.
Very respectful. But the Anjou pigeon was an absolute highlight.
Yeah.
Just beautifully wood roasted.
Did you get a tiny knife and fork to eat it with?
No, I got a big knife and fork to eat it with so I could just power my way through that bird. Rabbit ravioli.
Oh, really?
That was divine. Scottish langoustines. They were stunning.
Which are fancy prawns.
Very fancy prawns. Mm. Yeah, with a fancy price tag to go with it because they're Scottish. And an almond tart with fresh Kent strawberries.
Oh, nice.
That all went down very, very well.
And so I'm sure you wash this down with a sensible consumption of very classy vino?
Actually, we had Italian that night. Mm-hmm. And what's always interesting about going to a city like London is that their wine lists have such a great choice of varietals that we simply just don't see here because mm-hmm. it's just not economical to bring in such a broad range. So you really do get your palate to have some fun and really exercise. Mm. It's good.
Especially at this very pointy end of the restaurant business, you've got some amazing opportunities.
And places like the River Cafe are actually not out of everybody's price range. What's difficult about it is actually getting the reservation.
Yeah.
But, you know, for a special occasion, it's not beyond anyone's means. It's something you save up for and you have a great time.
Well, which is part of travel, isn't it, is getting to do these things that you'd never do at home and to make it part of the memorable experience of travel is to go out of your way and find places like the River Cafe or dinner by Hessen Blumenthal or any of the other bigger restaurants like Hakkasan or the Ivy.
Yeah, it definitely is. And you get to feel as if you're actually participating with the locals because you're dining, you're sharing a meal, you're at people's table. It's a really lovely way to get a feel for the city that you're spending some time in.
Mm. Mm. So what else was in London for you?
In that first week, there was a trip to the V&A, the Victoria and Albert Museum.
It's a great museum.
It is gorgeous.
If you haven't been to London and you are planning to go, the V&A needs to be very top of your list.
Most definitely. At the moment, they've got a David Bowie exhibition on that has over 300 objects from David Bowie's personal collection and everything from handwritten lyric song sheets to costumes, fashion, photography, his own instruments, music videos. I mean, really, it pays great tribute to such an influential pop star.
And a living, currently performing.
Yeah, it's lovely to have one who's still alive.
Yeah, and an incredible artist, but somebody who's still doing the rounds. Bowie is currently touring, I believe, with an orchestra. Is that wrong? Did I get that wrong?
You could be right. I actually didn't take too much notice of his touring dates because it wasn't anywhere that I was going to be. But I loved the fact that the exhibition was sponsored by Gucci and Sennheiser.
If you have some questions about Gucci, Sennheiser, the Victoria and Albert, or anything else, SMS us on 0427 JOY949 or email us on air at joy.org.au, or you can also leave a phone message, 1300 JOY949. We'd love to hear from our listeners. You know, actually, while you're away, Joe, we had a lot of different co-hosts, and they were all people who had done Taste of Radio. And that's one of the things that we want the listeners to engage with. It's the fact that Joy has amazing training programs and volunteer programs, and you don't have to be on air. There are lots of back of house things that need to be done to keep Joy on the air. And Taste of Radio is a great way to understand how to put a show together and produce it and be on air and do everything. But you don't have to do that. So Joe and I are both graduates. While Joe was away, we had the opportunity to get Chris and Michelle and Sarah to come on and fill your extremely pointy high shoes. And did you get to listen to any of those podcasts? Because they're all online. Or did you get to listen in at joy.org.au/listen live?
I actually listened into the podcast with Sarah in her very first program that she did while I was away.
She did an awesome job.
She has just got so many interesting travel stories.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And you can always join up on Joy. We had, when Sarah was on, we had the radiothon, but you can still join in today. It's $96 for a family. For a full membership for an individual is $72. $36 for concession if you're under 18, $22. And if you're a corporate titan, it's $165 to get your 10,000 staff member organisation signed up as a corporate sponsor of Joy, a corporate member, sorry, a business member of Joy. Don't want to get that wrong. So, yeah.
They're about the same prices that I paid to see some shows in London.
What did you see?
Untold Stories by Alan Bennett, with Alex Jennings starring as the lead role. And it covers two stories, both him and Cocktail Sticks. Him is about a child's understanding of music and first exposure to music. And Cocktail Sticks is taken from A Life Like Other People's, which is quite autobiographical of Alan Bennett. Brilliant production, and it's just a pleasure to be able to go to places like the National Theatre and see such great work on stage.
Absolutely. And was it easy to get tickets at the moment?
Yes, actually it was. There was one musical that people kept offering me tickets to, in fact two. One is called Once, and it was suggested to me by people who are actually within the arts community in London that one would only see it once. So I gave that.
What was that about?
I think it was
opening
some kind
cans
of
or something ridiculous.
Love story.
Oh.
Yeah, gone wrong.
Bless.
Just yeah, not really.
But not in a cool way. It's kind of like,
I think more in a Glee kind of way, as opposed to yeah, a little bit tiresome. And the other one, of course, is The Bodyguard, and I couldn't bring myself to do it.
I just didn't
bring that many changes of costume to go to The Bodyguard.
I'm recoiling in horror.
Yeah. Was that. There were some interesting international events that happened, though, when I was in London. Of course, the last day I was there, we had that tragedy in Woolwich with the young
on
soldier,
the
Lee Rigby, being, yes, mowed down by a car and then literally hacked to death in the street.
It's just awful.
Which really, I mean, it was amazing to see how Londoners reacted to
and
that.
And how did people off the street deal with that? Because that's another level from what's happened before. It was just complete
it was random.
Randomness.
You know, it was so random and so unexpected that people were definitely quite, I want to say that their sense of security was really questioned, and I think that would be, you know, fair to say, because it was so random and it was insane and almost psychopathic.
Yeah, and I'm sure that people were rattled, people on the streets, mums, dads, kids.
They were very rattled. And one of the reasons why it took so long for the armed police to actually get there was there had been an enormous amount of activities happening in Buckingham Palace that very day. The Queen had received the Estonian royal family. She had then distributed honours onto some military personnel, and then there was a garden party for the Paralympians and the Olympians. So it actually meant that there was an awful lot of security focused in and on Buckingham Palace
during
the daytime hours. And that meant that it was difficult for armed police to actually get out of the city just to get to Woolwich, which isn't too far. It's in the southeast. But
just next to Vauxhall, right?
Yes, and it just took them a little longer to get there.
Sad. Yeah, but that wasn't the going to totally discolour your trip after the UK, especially London. Where'd you go?
No, especially as I ended up coming back to London. But the next place on my itinerary was very sunny Spain.
Olé!
Yes, hola.
Oh, is there a difference?
There is such a big difference.
Is it a Catalan kind of Castellan thing?
One of the things that I noticed is that in every region in Spain, they say thank you with such a different emphasis. You would think that gracias is a word that is so short that you could only perhaps pronounce it in one way. But in fact, that is not true. Within that short word, there's about five different ways you can put the emphasis.
Delight us with the various.
Well, you could have gracias. You could have gracias. You could have gracias. There really is a whole lot of different ways that people say thank you.
Oh, how tonal of the Spanish to have developed that.
Yes, and you stand there looking like a bit of an idiot when you've just mastered the way to say thank you in Madrid and you find yourself in Jerez and they just think, around here, are you?
I'm rejecting that thanks. Wrong emphasis.
Most definitely.
It is a beautiful sunny day here in glorious Melbourne and we're talking to Jo about her trip. Now, we've heard about UK and now we're in Spain.
Yes, now we are tilting at windmills. And I'm wondering why it is that so many Spanish women love to wear white trousers.
Why is that?
I have no idea, but it's definitely more than a trend. It's a staple in a Spanish lady's wardrobe.
Is it really? It's weird because I only ever recognise seeing white trousers on uniforms and tampon ads.
Well, welcome to Madrid. Cordova, Jerez, Andalusia, Barcelona, everybody likes to wear white trousers.
Home of the white slack.
It is. I just kept thinking they must use a lot of nappy sand in their washing.
Mm.
But Spain was great because I'd used Airbnb to book all of the accommodation.
Yeah, it was interesting. The other week we were talking about the legalities with Airbnb and how some jurisdictions are challenging them because they are foregoing compliance with regards to fire and other health and safety issues. Also, they're avoiding tax. So businesses that are forced to use those services, particularly in New York City, are arcing up and saying, well, we have to pay tax and we have to face all these regulatory compliance issues and it costs a lot of money and we're being pipped to the post because people have got cheaper ways to stay, but they don't have the burden of cost.
Well, I'd have to say that in all of the accommodation that we stayed in, I really couldn't have faulted the cleanliness nor the capacity in the sense if there was an emergency to vacate quickly.
Well, most people are in apartments, what I'm understanding, or houses, and houses and apartments have a level of security and safety as it is. And I don't know many people who would directly expose themselves, let alone anybody else, to potential dangers.
Oh, look, you just wouldn't. I mean, even in a place like Spain where I would be quite, I think, within my rights to say that building regulations could be somewhat flexible. The buildings are still, people are living in them on a day-to-day basis. And I mean, they're
successfully living well.
Well, that's right, they are. There are hideous places like Benidorm, which was just such a blight on my landscape as I was driving past, and it really did make me fang it in the car just to
and
no 140 longer.
140 k's on the Autovía.
Oh, I think I was up to 165 to get past Autovía. Benidorm.
Well, you won't be threatened with many Spaniards in Benidorm, but it might feel like Newcastle.
Well, from what the Spaniards have said to me, in fact, there's almost nobody living in so many of the large condominiums that have been built because there's just no one there.
Is that because it was a hugely British, particularly in north of the UK, was very popular as a destination?
Yeah, but there were a lot of Spaniards who, I think, from what I was told, had purchased apartments within the condominium structures and with the view to flip for an increased property value. And, of course, it's just that the bottom has fallen out of the market. Yeah, it's just devastating there. So we did not take that exit because I was just horrified to go there. It's unbelievable that something so commensurately ugly could have been created on what would have been a beautiful seascape.
Mm.
Yeah,
but I mean, Spain has a huge amount of coast and a huge amount of breathtaking coast, right? So you did see some breathtaking coast.
You do see a little bit, but so much of it has been built up like Benidorm that it is very, very difficult to appreciate any of the natural beauty was there. But, you know, places like Madrid, of course, rely on creating an urban landscape, and that has such beautiful institutions like the Prado, where you can see all of the Velázquez and Goya collections that you don't have to be focused on the sea to have a great time in Spain.
Okay. So what was your highlight in Spain?
That's a really good question. I enjoyed so many parts of Spain, from Cordova, where you see you're in a place of such immense history. I mean, it's where Christopher Columbus got the go-ahead to sail around the world. It's where flamenco comes from. Then moving on to places like Jerez, which is where the sherry that we know and love mostly is made.
Especially on a cold evening.
Well, yes, or especially on a lovely, warm, sunny day when you'd like to just sit down and have a glass of fino and watch the parade in the piazza. It really is divine. And seeing all of the jacaranda trees in bloom, I just didn't appreciate that jacarandas, in fact, were even in Spain. But when they're in bloom, they look stunning against the sand and ochre colour of the buildings. Mm. Really a sight to see. Although Jerez does seem to have a bit of a downside. They really did feel the brunt of the banking crisis in Andalusia. So you see an awful lot of banks that are open with no one going in or out, and people who are definitely in a depressed state of mind because they've lost so much money.
So how did that affect social life and nightlife and dining and all these things that Spain is famous for?
It's very quiet, Mark.
Yeah.
It really is. Places would be
open.
Was
there any vibe? Still? Had it diminished or had it completely gone?
It's almost been decimated in certain areas. In parts of Madrid, I was really surprised. You know, the bars would open up at about 8 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. And by 10:30, 11 o'clock, the owner would be locking everything back up because there just hadn't been the patronage that you would once expect there to be. In some of the smaller places, you know, outside of Madrid, but still in southern Spain, you could see locals who would go in and have their first drink and get their complimentary aperitivo, their olives, their nuts, maybe some beautiful anchovies or sardines, and then they would quietly slip out the door. They wouldn't stay and order a tapas or any extra platters of jamón. I ate enough jamón for most small villages, I have to say. A bit of a jamón fetish was developed while I was in Spain. But it was very sad to see. And places like Granada, which rely on such a big tourist trade to come to see enormous draw cards like the Alhambra, which really is magnificent. I mean, if you are ever in the vicinity, it is such a sensational structure to not only see but to actually walk within and experience. But even places like that, their ticket sales are down, and the gift shops, which really have not at all tacky souvenirs but some really quite tasteful pieces, empty. So it's a real challenge.
Fridge magnets are going lonely.
There's a lot of lonely postcards, a lot of lonely tote bags.
And snow domes.
Snow domes are actually not so popular at the moment, but emery boards are very popular.
Emery boards? Yes. I just imagine a whole bunch of snow domes with La Sagrada Familia. I hadn't even thought of the emery boards.
Well, I don't know how you'd fit the familiar into a snow dome, seeing as it's not even going to be finished until 2040, which is quite phenomenal.
Well, the La Sagrada Familia, the cathedral.
Yes,
the Gaudi.
In Barcelona. Oh, yes, that is still an ongoing construction effort.
Is it really?
Yes, it may be finished by 2040.
2040?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah. I'm just looking at my watch, and that's a long time away.
Yeah, it's a substantial time frame that we're working to, but this is the Catholic Church, and you can pray for a long time.
I was raised German. I'm going to tap on my timepiece here and say 2040. Just because it rhymes doesn't mean it's time.
It's quite true. All of the larger monuments that I saw in Munich had been finished.
Yes, so should we get to Germany now? Have you got more about Spain?
Oh, I could go on and on and on about Spain.
All right, hold that thought. I'm just busting to ask. You went to Munich.
I did go to Munich, and I know you have a special place in your heart for Munich, and I do too now.
I think a lot of people do. Yeah. You going to Munich is one of those special things. I mean, I didn't live there or anything, and I think we've got some amazing listeners who have lived in Munich and love it very dearly. And one of, I think, Chris Furneaux has spent significant time going to Munich and back. It is a really special city.
Oh, it is. There's an aesthetic quality, and there's a sensibility that I found that the Bavarians who live in Munich have, and they share this, and maybe it's something that Melburnians can relate to very easily. It's a beautifully planned and laid out city, and things are done with that extra little bit of finesse that I think, you know, adds to the quality of life.
Yeah, Bavarians are known for having a strong embrace on the finer things in life. And the two big southern German states are the economic powerhouse of Germany and the foundation. But the funny thing about them is they're both states of villages and not cities. And that's the way they see themselves. And it's small. A small village to them is 150, 300,000 people. There might be 5 kilometres of land between the next one, but people think very much so in community values, and the social contract is a very big part of the way they think. And I was in Baden-Württemberg, where I went to school, but Munich in Bayern, the state next to it, also equally is independent. But the two big southern German states are very proud of their traditions and very, very proud of wearing traditional clothing still and rocking up in a phenomenal Mercedes or BMW, incredible piece of highly incredible levels of engineering and technical proficiency and dedication, hard work, and getting the smallest of details right. And they step out in traditional clothing.
Yes, it's not uncommon to see lederhosen on a Saturday morning.
And trachten.
Yep.
And the ladies in the dirndl and everything. It's very common. And they're beautifully made. And everything has just got that incredible sense of attention to detail and getting one thing done really well instead of a million things done half-assed.
Yeah, quality is important. Mm. And I was in Munich, actually, because we have a Melburnian who has a business in Munich.
Tell us about this Melburnian who has a business in Munich.
Mr. Matthew Bax. Now, some people might know Matthew because he has two bars here in Melbourne. Bar Americano here in the city, which is down one of our little laneways.
Where's Bar Americano? Is that off Flinders Street?
Presgrove Lane. It comes off Little Collins Street, between Little Collins and Collins Street. Down near the David Jones food hall kind of part of town. And then for a very long time, he had Durum in Church Street, which was one of the world's top 10 cocktail bars.
Yeah,
and
Durum was very German style.
Very, very German style.
Is he German?
No, Matt isn't German. He's from Adelaide.
Oh, might as well be.
Well, he's considered to be a German now, though. He's very much been embraced by his fellow community members in Munich.
Oh, good on him.
And he's opened a new bar in Munich called Gamsai. And I was actually there to...
Is it a Japanese theme?
No, it isn't. He's actually developed a bar that only uses ingredients that are locally available.
Oh.
And in season. So, for example, when I rocked up, I wasn't able to get an old-fashioned with a piece of citrus in it because there's no citrus in Munich in June.
So what's the radius that he's looking at? Like 200-kilometre radius?
It's something... Not even. It's something more like 50 to 100 kilometres, I would say, from Munich. But it's a new business and he's been open about 2 months, and he's just come back to Melbourne actually this week to relaunch Drum into Bar Economica, which opens tonight.
Oh, wow, excellent. And all the best to him and good luck. It's a fantastic location. Durum was very famous for having outstanding cocktails with incredible levels of this Germanic sensibility of detail, attention to detail. So good luck to him and his new ventures.
Yes, absolutely. I think it'll be an outstanding success.
So apart from bar hopping in Munich, what else do you get up to? It's a beautiful city.
It is a lovely city.
And very accessible.
It is everything is pretty much within walking distance. And they do have trams. So if you're getting a little homesick, you can just bop on a tram.
Mm.
The Lenbachhaus had actually just been reopened after a 4-year renovation by Lord Norman Foster and Partners. Ah. And this, of course, is the home to the Blue Rider. So for people who are interested in artists such as Kandinsky, Munter, Mark, Jawlowski, Cuban, really, that's the place to go. And I was very lucky to be there. It's only been open for a couple of weeks.
Oh, wow. Still smells like fresh paint.
It does, and it is stunning. They've done such a beautiful job.
Oh, excellent. What else was in Munich and this beautiful summery weather they're experiencing at the moment? And they do have beautiful weather in Munich. It's a great town.
Well, I couldn't help myself but just pop into the Hofbräuhaus area. Yes. And just take a turn to the left and keep walking down to the corner, and you come into this area that's a little dark, and it's Schumann's.
What's Schumann's?
Schumann's is probably one of the world's most classic cocktail bars.
Is it really?
Yeah, and it's funny that I found it.
We're going to hear more about that very soon. Munich.
Well, I think we better move from Munich to Marseille.
Marseille?
Yes.
As in La Marseille?
As in La Marseille, as in Euro Pride 2013 that is happening from the 10th to the 21st of July.
And what are all those proud Europeans doing?
They're doing everything. It's the biggest gay and lesbian pride festival in Europe is Euro Pride.
It would be a big deal this year with what's happened with the law change in France, and I'm sure there'll be lots of people running around with a rainbow flag cape.
I think there might even be a whole lot of marriages taking place.
Go.
So that will be big. And if you
well,
can't
bon chance
get
to them all.
Indeed, bon chance. And if you can't get to that side of the world, New York City has NYC Pride as well, and that happens from
the
28th.
Are there gays in New York City?
Just one or two. There's three people who are going to come together between the 28th and the 30th of June, and they're going to rally, they're going to be having VIP parties on rooftops, and they're going to have their march.
Brilliant.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with Joy.